Hello, and welcome back to the Balanced Garden Podcast, which sets out to cross the boundaries between the worlds inside and outside as we reflect on nature, philosophy, creativity, culture, and traditions that aim to support healthy relationships with ourselves, each other, the climates we inhabit, and all the spaces in between. I'm your host, Tiger Lily, and I'd like to thank you for listening, whether it's for the first time or every time. It's been a slightly longer pause than I anticipated since our last episode just over a year ago. Sometimes things take their time to come back around. But here we are with a timely podcast to reconnect with you and our seasonal cycles just as we reach the summer solstice. I'll now be aiming to bring you each podcast at these quarterly climaxes of each season. So the next one will be at autumn equinox, then winter solstice, and so on. In this podcast, I'm very happy to share a delicious conversation I had with Hannah Yu, who runs Eat Drink Hui, and tells us about how she's working with food and tea as medicine from her ancestral roots in Chinese philosophy through new paths into music and modern ways of gathering. But first, I'm having a chat with co-producer and Balanced Garden founder Jasmine Pradhan about why we're now focusing on these points in the year and what we'll be sharing with you on the platform from here on out. Jasmine, it's been a while. Tell us what is happening in the world of Balanced Garden.
Yeah, so really happy to be back feeling energized and inspired with you, Tiger Lily, with some new ideas or old ideas with new energy imbued into them. Yeah, really excited that the podcast is about to relaunch. And alongside that, the offering of seasonal workshops that include yoga, embodiment, meditation, ritual, ceremony, bringing together of a lot of modalities that I've found a lot of solace in. So that feels really exciting to be offering that out, not just enjoying it for myself. I think just moving away from this constantly churning out content to really allowing there to be space between each offering for our own inspiration to really flourish, and also for the people that we're sharing this with to have a chance to just be in the season and be in the theme of the quarter or the space between equinox and solstice. There's a lot that happens in the quarter of a year. You just look outside, the world has completely changed, and you look inside and generally we've completely changed as well. So it feels like a really nice way to be working.
Yeah, and perhaps a bit easier to keep up, not just for us, but you know, that barrage of endless content and things that you're trying to do, so many yes. things and trying to consume. And the workshop that you're going to be running on solstice on June the 21st, tell us what that's going to involve.
For me, to really mark these important moments of solstice and equinox, these kind of pause moments in our wheel of the year, is or has become probably the most important practice in my life. It's like laying down all these little anchor points, and I feel so much more connected to nature by going inside at these times of year and really just sensing the energy of, if it's summer solstice, the energy of the sun, the abundance, the heat, the generosity of the sun. And so I want to explore that, or explore that through really feeling that in my body, beyond the muscles and the tissues, into the kind of cells and the energy flow of the body, what it feels like to be a body at this time of year, and to actually come to embody the season, so that we harmonize essentially with what's going on externally. And as you know, we've really lost our way with that in the new times. In the old times, we would have very naturally, without necessarily needing to mark these moments, we would have very naturally been in tune with the outside world. And so, yeah, this workshop is a way of just really honing in on this very potent moment, feeling in our bodies, exploring it through movement, through rest, through visualization, through ritual, and hopefully just adding some meaning and some sacredness to this time of year that quite often just gets skipped past.
Yeah, I guess that's the nature of consumer capitalist modern world is that things that have really evolved from very naturalistic rituals that, like you say, would have been built into our daily lives, just things like doing the harvest, have now come to involve next party season, next like presents to buy, next display. It's almost like you can see the supermarkets just like churning them out. One that like right, Easter's over, get like the next thing on the shelves.
Barbecues out.
Yeah. And then it's like the bonfire night stuff or triple, Halloween masks and it all these things have, and as we talk about on the podcast, they have roots and stories and traditions behind them. But how do we actually locate some meaning in like this time and place, I guess, is the question. How in this world do we manage to find a connection with that?
It's interesting because I think in the past I have had the tendency to overcomplicate this process and think that there's some framework that I need to follow or some teaching that's going to give me the connection I'm so desperately seeking. That was definitely the case for a long time. You get caught up in spiritual teachers or practices in this search for connection. And actually, what I've found in the last couple of years is it is so much simpler than that. You don't need to read a book. You don't need to follow a special teacher. You just need to get outside and notice what is happening in the world around you. And it speaks for itself. It's like you go outside in summer, you see roses in full bloom, you feel the heat of the sun on your skin. Everything is green and abundant. And you can feel that energy within you. So you go out, you sense, and then you just check in with yourself and think, okay, well, how does my body feel in this moment? And that's not to say that the body will always be perfectly attuned to the seasons, but your body will always be experiencing what the world outside is showing. And the more that you just check in with the outside and the inside, the greater the connection grows. Things like, picking wild teas, so just foraging for herbs, they're free, they're pretty much everywhere. You can find out what's in season really easily. Keep your eye out, pick a little bunch on your walk through the park, put it in some hot water and drink it. And yeah, that's a really beautiful way to connect more deeply to what nature is offering essentially as a gift.
Yeah, it's usually what the body needs is what's
Exactly.
on offer outside at that time of year.
Yeah, cleansing nettles and cleavers, they pop up just when we're moving out of winter stagnation and we really need our systems to start to galvanize a little bit. And that's exactly what nettle and cleavers do. I mean, I'm not a herbalist, but generally the things that come up are the things that the plant does because they're quite obvious. Like with a cleaver, it's sticky, it clears, it sticks to the insides and draws out what is stagnant. It's quite amazing how obvious they make it, really, the plants for
Yeah.
us.
And it's easy to slip into a kind of I don't have time mentality. Just remember that it doesn't, you don't have to dedicate, a whole day or afternoon or go and do a foraging workshop. You just like can do it on your way from one place to another. It's any as with anything, it's just habitual, isn't it? It's like I can certainly fall into the habit of just like not looking around me and just being in my head and thinking about what the next thing to do is, or how I'm gonna navigate that situation that I'm not in right now. Because you do have to kind of intentionally activate the part of your brain that can see outside of you and use your peripheral vision, and it changes your the whole state of your body when you do that, doesn't it?
It does. It completely changes the state of your body. And I think that that is where the sort of collection part of this can be really useful, because as you walk from your house to your bus stop or whatever it is, and you pass nature, to have a little thing in your mind, I will collect something to take into my everyday life. And that's not, we don't want to be taking indiscriminately, and we don't want to be taking too much, but to pick a beautiful summer bloom and to display it in your home, or to pick the herbs for tea. It's like there's something in the actually engaging with the natural world in some way and giving back, or tending to a garden, or tending to plants in your garden if you have time, or a window box. In some way, just like relating and interacting, rather than walking out and being like, I have to notice the blossom, or I have to notice the this, because you can so easily get sidetracked by your mind. It's like the mind needs a little mission.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what, we're reflecting on a part as a part of day-to-day living and survival that would have just been ongoing, which would bring you into connection with nature. So yeah, finding ways to weave them back in, and hoping that this podcast offers ideas for how to do that, and that in itself it's a little moment just to dwell in the time of year that we are passing through. Balanced Garden's first embodied earth event will be on summer solstice this Wednesday the 21st of June, online from 8 till 9:30 p.m. Join Jasmine for a 90-minute workshop which will involve a combination of yin, flow, and restorative yoga, acupressure, guided meditation, and sacred ritual, which will tune into the gifts of the season, hopefully leaving you feeling clearer, lighter, rejuvenated, and in deeper harmony with yourself and the rhythm of the natural world. Like Jasmine and I, Mark Sparrow has also paused to reflect on the regenerative practices used by him and his partner Tom at their farm Haddon Copse in Dorset, the home of Angel Cottage Organics. As he recently wrote, "It's an act of trust taking a pause like this, placing faith that the pause will do its work, and in the future there will be new words to share." Farming life is characterised by pauses and faith placing like this. We till the soil, we plant seeds, we shepherd new life, all with a degree of hope that sometime in the future the results will yield harvest and fruit. Farming with an ecologically regenerative emphasis requires even more of this willingness to initiate something and then sit back with patience to see what may spring into being. It can be daunting, unnerving, sometimes disheartening, but when something new stirs, the feeling is never less than joyful. The hedges we planted 12 years ago and which we have allowed to grow untrimmed are even now bursting with blossoms so white and so plentiful that to see them thrills the heart. In and out of their branches dart birds, butterflies, and insects so numerable that the air thrums with their movement. The orchard trees that 10 years ago were tiny sticks in the ground are now branching trees that shade the chickens and beehives that live beneath them. Pausing allows nature to unfold at its own pace, a pace which is so very different from the one by which we modern humans live our lives. We are so intent on organising, directing, and controlling our activities that we risk missing out on much that is unfolding at a rhythm very different from our own. By allowing the trees and hedgerows and wayside plants to grow at their own pace, habitat has developed, which this spring has provided home to one of the now rarest of British birds, the nightingale. This slight but singularly spectacular songbird will only nest in the thickest tangles of blackthorn and bramble, something which modern farming often seeks to cut back. Likewise, patches of land which, when we began our rewilding journey, threatened to become choked by the so-called noxious weed, creeping thistle, have now evolved into species-rich patches of ground where oak and ash saplings thrive alongside suckers of blackthorn and countless species of grass and flower. This diversity has outstripped the thistle's vigour and arrested its apparently unstoppable spread across our land. Had we not the faith to pause, we would have missed this diversity and natural balance and been slaves to hand weeding, or worse, weed killing. But pausing like this doesn't always bring joy. Listen as we might, we haven't heard a cuckoo on the farm or the surrounding countryside this spring, the first time since we arrived here that this distinctive sound has not been heard. Is this a one-off? Or are we witnessing, by its silence, the dramatic decline in English cuckoo numbers? We have lost 2/3 of them in the last 30 years, due in great part to increasing droughts in southwest Europe, making it difficult for the birds to make their long journeys. Will we ever hear them again? You don't need to be an organic farmer or landscape rewilder to experience the natural benefits of taking a pause. Why not try identifying a beautiful place near your home, be it garden, park, or countryside, and taking yourself there simply to sit down and be still? At first, there will be little to see, but as you allow the pause to work its magic, you will begin to notice all sorts of life which you would have otherwise missed had you simply rushed by. The movement of grass in the wind, the arrival of an ant or spider, the settling of a butterfly, the glimpse of a bird now reassured that you meant it no harm. By slowing your pace, you begin to reconnect with the multicoloured, multi-voiced world which we once enjoyed an intimate connection with and which we now speed past. 5 minutes is enough to begin to taste this reconnection, 15 even better. Smaller miracles might occur if you spend an hour. And if we practice this pausing regularly, if we take time to notice the nature all around us, perhaps we might also find we have the time to notice our own true natures. What ideas, thoughts, or feelings might find room to take roost in us if we slow down long enough to allow them in? What might we find is not the problem we thought it was, but instead a part of the rich experience of life, which is always adapting, changing, and growing? And what might we notice is missing in our lives if we allow ourselves the time to feel its lack? As we approach the high point of the summer solstice, a moment when even the sun stands still, I hope you find time to pause and discover what happens when you do. Thank you, Mark, for sharing these inspiring snippets of life on the farm and ways in which we can experience some of the communion with nature from whichever climate we are surrounded by. And if you wish to take a deeper dive into nature, you can join Mark in a new venture that has taken shape as a way of sharing what's being planted and shepherded on Haddon Copp's farm. Soil to Soul, a one-day retreat to reconnect with nature, will take place on 1st of July and 10th of September this year. It will be a chance to spend a day slowing your pace, opening your senses and enriching your relationship with the wealth of the natural world. You can also camp on the farm for free the night before and the night after the retreat. And Balanced Garden subscribers are able to get a discounted rate for the day. For more info and how to book, head to the blogcast at balancedgarden.co.uk. Hannah Yu is a cook and facilitator of food and tea as medicine gatherings. And here is a conversation we shared about the wisdom of wellness in Chinese medicine and ways to gather and eat seasonally, as well as many other ear treats.
Hannah, hello. Tell us, how did you come to be where you are? Who is Hannah?
I don't even know where to start. I guess just an introduction of who I am. I'm British Chinese, and my granddad in particular was a traditional Chinese medicine doctor. And I've always grown up with lots of herbs and acupuncture and lots of sayings about not being cold at certain times, not eating certain foods at certain times, and all sorts of things that I used to see as restrictions. And as I've grown into myself and also into motherhood, I'm starting to recover some of that heritage and that culture. And whilst I was pregnant, my grandfather passed away. And with new life, it's really hard to grieve lives that have passed. So I didn't know how to make space for that. And I came into learning about traditional Chinese medicine really intentionally as a way to remember him and to honor him and to grieve him. So that is where I currently am. I'm a student of like Chinese philosophies, like Taoism, ecology, and a lot of traditional Chinese healing practices. And yeah, that's Hannah in this current moment, is uncovering a lot of that, I guess. So I work with food, I work with tea, I work with gathering, and all of that for me personally is a grief ritual. And outside of me is wanting to share and commune with people in this knowledge.
Wow, that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear about your grandpa. I'm wondering if your relationship with food and cooking for people, and had that already become, was that already something you were doing before you integrated the Chinese medicine rituals into it, or the principles into that?
So I've always cooked. I've always been in kitchens, and going into lockdown and then coming out of lockdown with a child, I think I was really out of practice of being with people, and I found it really difficult to connect in a way that felt intentional and that felt meaningful and that felt like it was meeting me where I was at in that moment. So I was craving some form of structure almost to connect again. So my supper clubs actually started when my daughter was like 4 months old or something, and I didn't know how to have people around. I was so out of socializing. So it started off with like two friends coming around for dinner, like a few friends coming around, and yeah, and then I just started to weave in people coming around for dinner with seasonal foods and with certain prompts and thinking about the seasons. And that gave me a structure to connect with people, even old friends again. So that was a really intentional way of like bringing people to my table.
Well, that's a clever approach to it. And I just wondered if that seasonally, you mentioned cooking seasonally, but what kind of time of year was it when you started to and want to reconnect with people?
It was like the depths of winter. And I think because of the lockdown, we really were isolated and we felt very isolated. And it's interesting, like the winter, like so each season in Chinese medicine, there's five seasons. Late summer is the extra season. And they correspond to five organs, and those organs correspond to the five elements, and the five elements always also correspond to certain emotions. So in the depths of winter, the emotion is fear, and it's the water element, and it's the organ of the kidneys. And it's interesting that it was in that moment, I guess, of feeling really alone that this was birthed. And in springtime, and it started to take more shape. So yeah, the five seasons, spring, summer, late summer, autumn, winter, correspond to the five elements, which are, yes, yeah, spring is wood, summer is fire, late summer is earth, autumn is metal, and winter is water. And the organs that go with that are the liver and gallbladder, the heart and small intestine, the spleen and the stomach, the lungs and the large intestine, and the kidneys. And I just forget the last one. So that's the, and then the emotions that go with that, anger, joy, worry, grief, and fear. And in, from the emotions perspective that correspond to all of them, they're not seen as like positive or negative. They're just seen as like very core and almost like essential emotions that we all live with. So it's not to attach value to anger, for example. It's to acknowledge that we, that anger does feature in our life, and then how do we move with it? How do we alchemize it? How do we just make space for the anger that does exist? But summertime, the element that we work with is fire, and the emotion is joy. So joy is associated to the heart, and all the organs in Chinese medicine are paired. So there's a yin organ and a yang organ, and the yin and yang sit together and are mutually supportive. So the yin organ is the heart and the yang organ is the small intestine. And in summer, we work with this pairing. So a lot of it is about settling the heart and also working on digestion. And there's lots of like spirits and legends and myths around the organs as well. So there's the myth that the vermilion bird lives in the heart, resides in the heart. And legend has it that this bird is quite flighty in nature. And when we become destabilized and when our hearts aren't settled, the vermilion bird returns to heaven instead. And the vermilion bird is who helps us discern the truth, who helps us see clearly. So there's something in settling our hearts so that the bird can reside in us, so that we can see the truth and so that we can discern clearly what's going on in our lives. So there's lots of myth and storytelling around the seasons and elements. And I think that's that, from there I weave in to my supper club. So for example, I'm interested in the relationship between discernment, which is like the role of the small intestine, deciding what's me, what's you, what am I going to keep, what am I going to let go of, what do I want to like absorb into the body, and what do I want to release. So that from a physiological perspective can be translated into an energetic thing. Yeah, how close am I going to bring you to me? Am I going to absorb this energy in? Am I going to keep this away? And all of that has to do with settling the heart. And like I said, the emotion of joy in the heart. So I like to theme a supper club around the relationship between truth and discernment and joy, for example, or theme a supper club around stabilizing the heart or making space for what the heart is saying, or around fire, for example. There's lots of themes around fire. And I use seasonal foods, and a lot resonates with people. I find that people are very ready to talk about certain things. And it's interesting that what is written as related to certain organs and seasons is also what people are most ready to talk about.
It's really interesting. How do the heart and the small intestine then connect?
So with the yin and yang organs, if we, so you can call it like feminine and masculine, or you can call it substance and form. They're like really dependent on each other, and it's not so much a physical relationship between the two, but it's like a supportive one. So the yang, the small intestine, provides the structure and the holding for the heart. So qi is like prana, it's like life force, it's energy. That character in Chinese is written with a grain of rice in it, which means that we bring a lot of our energy and our life force from the food that we eat, which is why food therapy is so important. But it's also about the relationship between like what keeps us alive. There's a essential relationship between the food we consume and the beating of our hearts and the circulation of our blood around the body, and and with the blood, the qi around our body as well. So it's more of a meaning relationship or a structure relationship. I guess something that I'm really learning and getting closer to in learning about the five elements is their relationships. And summertime is the fire element, but the fire rests on how much wood you have to burn, and wood is the element for spring. And how much wood you have is dependent on winter and water, and how much water you had to be able to grow your wood. So often when we think about the fire out of balance or summertime being out of balance, we say in Chinese, like, when the child is ill, take care of the mother. So when we think about, oh, our summer's out of balance, the roots of that may be in spring or in winter. So actually to think about the way we care for ourselves in this moment is an investment in our future self, and feeling really well could be seasons in the making in the past. So to just like be in cycle and in season, and like knowing that everything you do now is pouring in to the future.
You had a summer supper club recently. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of food and how you weave it into the menu?
Yeah, so I always just see what food there is available. I mean, a lot of what I'm studying is from a Chinese context, and I don't want to take what a certain dates in the Chinese calendar according to a Chinese geography and climate and try to apply it too rigidly to the UK. So I also want to look at what is seasonal. And then also I just follow the colours. So red is the colour associated to summertime as well. So I found like red cabbage leaves, radicchio leaves, tomatoes. I try to weave in lots of like the colour. And then also the flavour is bitter. And bitter is like a cooling flavour. So in the midst of summer, with the fire element, we want to be able to balance that with cooling foods. So cooling foods could be things like watermelon, cucumber, mung beans are cooling, and then bitter flavors. So you could have like bitter melon. I use like green tea and chrysanthemum and like motherwort. These are all like quite bitter tasting things. And I weave them into the teas and the food. But also across the food, I think about what could balance them. So water and fire are opposite each other, and in terms of the emotions that would be opposite would be joy and fear. So I also think about the fear on the water is associated to kidneys and like kidney health. It's good to eat a lot of black food, so like black sesame, black rice. So I also think about, like, from the theme, what other organs and emotions could I be using to like provide balance and can be supportive in that space as well. I just have fun with it, see what's available, and then often from there I like weave the story and the narrative around it. And then whilst we're eating, like, oh, this is liver supporting, or this is kidney supporting. And and I guess that's an important point, is that the seasons and the that you can't like separate summer and fire and heart out from all the others. So it's also to like tap into the relationships.
Wow, it sounds nourishing on so many levels and quite like so beautiful. I can just picture the spread. And the other element of ritual that you bring in, your event music before medicine, what inspires you to bring music in?
Yeah, so the traditional Chinese character for medicine is made up of plant and music. So the character medicine, when you read medicine, you're reading a combination of music and plants. And I think there's so much truth and wisdom in traditional classical Chinese, that when language was coming to be and form was being put to the way things were being called, that there was like something quite essential in the healing properties and the medicinal properties of plants and of sound and of music. Part of my practice is to read Chinese and to really study the makeup and the history of how that word came to be, because Chinese, like, its roots are like pictorial. I like really wanted to be able to make space for that and create gatherings and conversation around the role that music has for us in a healing kind of way, whether that's when we're experiencing pain, we're experiencing change. Often, whether or not we're musicians, we have music that we listen to or that means something to us at certain times and that have comforted us, has accompanied us. So I was like really wanting to explore the music element. And a very dear friend, Aman Nouri, he runs Sound and Solidarity, which is when he gathers people together to listen to music around a certain theme and to connect and discuss and really intentionally foreground music and the power of music. So we decided to come together and we like eat together, we do the supper club element, we do tea, we do meditation, we do different movement practices to settle us to then listen to music based on certain themes. And we all choose a song. So the last one we did was themed around transitions. And then we all chose songs that maybe have been with us during transition or holds transition or enables transition. And then we sit and we listen to it, to the song in its entirety, and really allow that to comfort us or to nourish us or to speak to any way that we might be wanting healing or wanting being seen or connected to. I've not really like worked with music before, and since doing that, I thought it was, really powerful to bring music in and to give it the respect of the power of it from a health perspective.
What's really coming out for me, this conversation is like the theme of communion and rituals that have always brought people together, but can become a very isolated thing, eating alone, listening to music on your own in your headphones, very kind of boxed in and closed off from people. But what you're saying is reminding me that these are things that are so important to be shared, and that are rituals that do bring people together. And often, of course, they do. But I think the intentionality of how you weave them into your events is really special, and really honoring things that often are taken for granted as well, that are just we just consume. Food, music, like as a human right almost. I mean, I think gathering together with such focus on things that are so important, nourishing the soul and the body, is really wonderful.
When I started it, I think I was more interested in the conversation around it. Over the course of last year, I began to do a lot more intentional body work, and I was practicing Tai Chi and Qigong with my mum. And I started to learn about the nervous system and how we can verbally communicate, but also our nervous systems are also in communication with each other. And I wanted to find a way to gather that was really intentional, that allowed our nervous systems to find a way of settling into being together. So being with each other without necessarily like socializing, but being with each other and eating, being with each other and drinking, and being with each other and listening to music. And it's really taken on a really beautiful form that I hadn't anticipated to begin with.
So what have you got lined up?
So Sunday, the 25th of June, we have a gathering that will involve a meditative walk, a tea ceremony, and a slow meal at Soane Centre, which is in Tower Hamlet Cemetery Park. And then we'll take a pause because I'm going back to China in July. And when in China, I'm going to reconnect with tea teachers and learn from them and learn more about the Yangsheng tradition. And then from August onwards, I think I'll come back with more offerings of supper clubs and tea ceremonies, but I don't have anything like necessarily planned for then. I'm going to see what emerges from that trip.
Where's the best place? Follow what you're doing.
I never said actually what I do is called Hui, which is the character for wisdom or knowledge. And that character is made up of a broom, two hands, a broom and a heart. And it means sweeping the heart as a daily practice and sweeping the dust away from the heart. And that in essence is how wisdom, like how you gain wisdom or how you gain knowledge. So it's the idea that it's not a striving thing. You don't strive to learn more, but it's about receptivity. And my Instagram is called Eat Drink Hui. So Hui is spelled H-U-I at Eat Drink Hui. as my website is that as well. And you can subscribe on my website for events, but normally I share them on Instagram. Yeah, that's how people can find me.
Thank you so much to Hannah for sharing her wisdom and inspiration with us. I really enjoyed our conversation and I hope you did too. All the ways you can connect with her can also be found in the blogcast at balancegarden.co.uk. As the earth tilts its top most closely towards the sun, which finally reaches its highest point in the sky of the northern hemisphere, it momentarily appears to stand still before beginning its return journey to the southern hemisphere. The word solstice means sun standing still, derived from the Latin words sol for sun and sistere to stand still. Will we pause with it for a moment to appreciate this life-giving, life-taking force of fire that our world truly revolves around? To stop looking anywhere else except up to the sky, out into the space surrounding us, which we spin through without thinking much about most of the time, is a practice mostly left out of many people's daily routines. But will you take a moment not just to look, but also to see? Sometimes it takes a pause, a breath, an hour, a day, a week, month, or year before seeds once planted, perhaps intentionally or perhaps not, will come to fruition. It can be easy to forget that the planet goes on spinning, that seasons change, and what or who once was here today will not be tomorrow. But this is the nature of all things. They never last, and they're never lost. Now I will read for the first time an excerpt from the Old Testament, because this was recently read by my cousin at my grandfather's funeral, and I found it deeply comforting to hear. So I wanted to share it with you too. It's from chapter 3 of the book of Ecclesiastes, also known as the book of man under the sun, which seems fitting. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. Thank you for listening to the Balanced Garden podcast, which is written and produced by me, Tiger Lily Raphael. The soundtrack is Yes Mike by Manasseh Meets Praise on Roots Garden Records. For show notes, head to the blogcast at balancegarden.co.uk. And if you'd like to support the podcast, please rate and review it and share it with your friends. Until next time, live well and enjoy.